J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
There was an old farmer who lived by a rock. Sat in the meadow, was shaking his fist at some boys who were down by the creek. Feet in the water, their hands on their marbles and playthings. And in days of yore, they met a young maiden. She looked like a pretty young creature. She sat on the grass, pulled up her dresses to show us her ruffles and laces with the white fluffy duck. Said she was learning a new way to bring up her children and teach them to knit, while the boys in the barnyard were shoveling refuse and litter from yesterday's hunt, while the girl in the meadow was rubbing her eyes at the boys just like girls sometimes do, to make it quite clear that she wanted to go for a nice pleasant stroll on the grass. Hurry back home for a nice piece of ice cream and cake that stood three layers tall. After dessert, she was ready to go for another walk down by the dock. But then a young man with a sizable roll of 100s and a big bulge up front, he'd ask politely, she'd show him her little pet dog that was subject to fits. He'd reach on over, grab hold of her small tender hands with the movement so quick. She'd bend on over and suck on his soda so sweetly till she finished it. And pull down her panties to rub on her hip that she bruised as she ran down the halls. Cause he tried to force her to lick on his candy so tasty made of butterscotch. And then he spread whipped cream all over her cookies that she had been baking all night. If you think this is dirty, you're f***ing well right.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky, you're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Friday, September 23rd, 2022. 46 days remaining until the midterm clusterfuck. How are you doing, kids? It's JC, and you are at jcontheline.com. I officially have a teenager in the house again. Francesca Corcoran was born exactly 13 years ago today. May I also point out that middle school is a bitch. I've never had boys. All my kids are girls, and what girls do to one another in middle school should be studied by a massive team of psychologists and therapists involved in the federal government. And I got to start keeping better track of this stuff, because I swear to God, every time she has a birthday, I end up having to pay for an iPhone. I don't know what keeps happening here. I thought we just got her a new iPhone. So, here we go again on that. She's a great kid. And she shares a birthday with Bruce Springsteen. That can't be all bad, right? Yesterday, I was talking about the hurricane, and I probably should have been more expressive on the whole thing, because people said to me, JC, that hurricane is going out to sea. That hurricane is going to skirt past Bermuda, and then it's going to be Canada's problem. By the way, it could hit, and you always say could with regard to hurricanes, because you don't really know for sure. They have not perfected the science of trying to figure out the path of hurricanes. But, they come up with a pretty good idea. And right now, that thing looks like it could just absolutely obliterate like Nova Scotia in a couple of days. Anyhow, if you said all that about the path of the hurricane, you'd be absolutely right. And people were correcting me, saying it's not going to come anywhere near it. And see, I should have explained it further, because that's the hurricane that's out there right now. The one that is developing right now, still out over the ocean, that's the one I'm talking about. There's two of them. And so that one looks like it's going to go right into the Gulf. And this morning, They updated the whole thing, and it looks like it's going to come into the Gulf of Mexico and then make a right turn, and it's going to go plowing right into the sort of Naples, Fort Myers area as a Cat 3. It's 110 miles an hour winds, not to mention the storm surge, the flooding, and everything like that. It's going to be a big story. There's a lot of people in the Midwest that have property in that area. You know, Cindy Pressler just left there after she was unceremoniously dumped by Channel 5 a couple of years ago. She moved down to Florida and was doing the weather out of the Naples, Fort Myers area. And about a month ago, well, she had been filling in at a Miami station just on weekends and vacation filling and stuff like that. And they were like, she's pretty good. And they gave her a full-time gig. So she and her husband, Dave, have moved to the Miami area. Normally, you'd be, you know, with regard to hurricanes, you'd be more concerned about that area than you would be, you know, the Naples, Fort Myers area. As Mike Shannon used to say, you can't argue with the weather. Rumor going around, by the way, that Mike Shannon's health is has taken a turn for the worse. I have no idea if that's true or not, and I've seen conflicting stories about it. But the man is, what, 80-something years old, and I guess it's normal to start to, you know, worrying about stuff like that right about that age. All right, it is autumn. It is autumn, and if you're looking for songs that for some reason represent the change of the season, you got Harvest Moon by Neil Young, Ramble On, Led Zeppelin. I forgot about that one. Guns N' Roses, November Rain, Bob Seger's Night Moves, that's a stretch. Silver Springs, Fleetwood Mac, that's a stretch too. Maggie May, Rod Stewart, Indian Summer by The Doors, and then there's an Indian Summer by Joe Walsh. Then you got Moon Dance, Van Morrison, that's a pretty good one, and Leaves That Are Green, which is a Simon and Garfunkel song that I've never heard of. Speaking of Florida, and we were just a couple of moments ago, big Sunday afternoon football game. This is the late game on Sunday, the 3:20 game. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in Tampa for the Bucs home opener against Tom Brady, and nobody seems to have any idea what's going on in Tom Brady's head right now. He's got major woman problems, and, you know, probably for good reason too. Can you tell your wife, you know, I'm in my 40s now and probably not a good idea for me to continue to play professional football, even though I am fucking Tom Brady, so I'll go ahead and I'll retire. And then he's retired for like a month, and then he says, ah, you fucked up, you trusted me. But Giselle is like, hey, listen, motherfucker, I got my own money, okay? I don't need yours. So I got these kids running around here, and, you know, we don't want to run into a situation like it's Uncle Daddy. And Brady is clearly rattled. You know, I see all the stories down here because it's right down the road. The stadium is 10 miles from where I'm sitting right now. That boy is messed up right now, and you can see it in his play. And even just, you know, the way he stands there at the podium is like, that's not, you know, it's not the way you do it. Because when you're the quarterback, you are the leader of the team. And if the team senses that, hey, something's wrong here with our fearless leader, that trickles all the way down. That trickles all the way down to the organization at its very roots. I remember Peyton Manning, when he was being interviewed a long time ago, he said, when you walk out onto that football field, when you are the quarterback, you walk out there and you want every set of eyes on you. You walk out there like you are the only person on the field that matters. And if that sounds egomaniacal or sort of out of whack a little bit, that's how you win. Doesn't matter if it's true or not. You got to believe that in your head, though. You walk out there and you go, I'm the shit. I am running this show, especially when you're on your home field. You lose that swagger. You lose that swagger, and, you know, people sense that. You imagine the Packer defensive line is going to be yelling at Tom Brady during that game? Hey, Giselle this and Giselle that. So, Norm, I mean, this is a big, big football game on Sunday. Like I said, it's the late game on Sunday. And normally, I would be saying, oh, no, put your money on Tom Brady. Not now. Not until at least we know that Tom Brady has his personal life straightened out and he's got his head screwed back on. It also would help if the Bucs had some receivers, because Everybody's injured, and they're bringing guys up from the taxi squad to play on Sunday. This is not good. Take the Packers. Take the Packers. I'm sorry to report to you that they're putting in a little chance of a shower or even a passing thunderstorm tonight. For those of you going to see Mr. Blue Sky, the ELO tribute band, there's still tickets available. It's at the Chesterfield Amphitheater. Our buddy Smash is going to be out there. He will be emceeing the show. And don't be surprised if Smash gets out there and sings a song or two with the band. But this is Jeff Faulkner's baby and Abby Stahlschmidt. And I'm telling you, if you're not doing anything tonight, go to this show. You are going to be astonished as to how good this is. You think El Monstero is good. They are. They're fantastic. Wait till you see this show. St. Louis right now, as far as I'm concerned, is the home to the two best tribute bands in the business right now. And I've seen other, you know, tribute shows in other cities. We have something very, very unique, very, very special in St. Louis. So take advantage and go see that show tonight. I met John Goodman for the very first time on this date in 1988. It was just a Sally Field, Tom Hanks movie called Punchline. The movie stunk, by the way. It was a mess. I even think it was supposed to be loosely based on the story of Roseanne. But anyhow, like I said, the movie was a wreck. But they give you like these little set of notes, just, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 lines of background back in those days. And so all I knew was that I was going in to interview this guy who was in the movie, played Sally Field's husband in the movie. And that I noticed, and I was like, oh, from Springfield, Missouri. It's like I'm walking in. He knows me. I have no idea who he is. It's hard to imagine a time when people didn't know who John Goodman was. So, you know, we do the interview, and it's very entertaining. He's so funny. I mean, there's times where I say to myself, John missed his calling. He should have been a stand-up comedian. That's how funny he is. He's just so naturally funny all the time. And so I come back to St. Louis, and a couple of weeks later, when the movie is getting ready to open up, I run this interview on, well, at that time, Channel 5. And, you know, it's just another piece. It's just another interview, and I did the best I could with it. So now, fast forward about a year and a half, I want to say, maybe actually almost 2 years, and it's a Saturday night, I'm at home, and I get a call from somebody in the Busch Stadium press box that says, hey, John Goodman is up here in one of the suites. And so now, because in that year and a half, 2 year period right there, John Goodman was in everything. You know, within that nearly two-year period, he went from being a complete unknown. I think the second movie he did was Arachnophobia, and then Everybody's All-American. Oh, gosh, what else? Oh, I think he got the job on Roseanne. So like I said, in that two-year period, he goes from being completely unknown to being just everywhere. So, you know, being the good entertainment reporter that I was back then, I hopped in the car, and I drove down to the stadium. And I went up to the press level, and I found out where he was, and I went in. And I walked in the door to his suite, and John Goodman turns around, sees me. He is well lubricated at that point, and he just runs over and puts a bear hug around me and lifts me off my feet. And he wasn't even breathing hard. He's a big guy, and he just kept saying, you gave me a fair shot. You gave me a fair shot. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? And then it dawns on me, all of his friends in St. Louis saw that piece and called him in California and said, John, this is great. You know, you the pride of Afton. JC did this great story on you. It was just sensational. It was great. He made you look fabulous. And John Goodman was very appreciative of that. And we've been friends ever since. Boy, that seems like a previous lifetime, 1988. Holy cow. 10 years later, in 1998, I was in Chicago interviewing Oprah for this movie, Beloved, which was weird. And the problem was she thought the movie was sensational. I didn't like her people. She was surrounded by five or six women, one in particular, that just looked like your textbook man-hater. That's the thing that people don't understand my experience has been that when you actually finally get to the celebrity, 99% of the time, they're just like as nice as can be. And they know, and they understand what your job is. So, they're trying to give you a good interview. It works to their benefit anyhow. So most of the time, people, when you actually sit down face to face with them, they're just great. It's getting there. That's the problem. You get through all of the publicists and managers and assistants and people who think that the best way to help the celebrity is to keep you away from them. On this date in 1987, Danny Bonaducci, yes, that one from the Partridge Family, was working at a radio station in Philadelphia, and I knew Danny a little bit, so we called him up on the air and we said, here's the deal, Philadelphia, or that part of the country, I don't know, somewhere in Pennsylvania lottery, I can't remember, this was 1987, but there was some sort of huge lottery thing, but you could only buy tickets if you were in Pennsylvania. So we said, we're going to send you a check. Will you buy us 500 lottery tickets? And so we had him on the air, and he did, and we won nothing. And as I think about it now, knowing what Danny Bonaducci was ingesting and pumping into his veins and into his body back then, I'm surprised he didn't just run off with the check. And a delightful day on this date back in 1995 when, after I was unceremoniously dumped from the 50,000-watt clear-channel voice of Del Mar Gardens, KMOX, and they replaced me with a woman by the name of Barbara Whitesides, who was a talentless, and I have reason to believe, very unhappy individual, and she lasted less than 2 years, and they bounced her. She was supposed to be the second fucking coming, and didn't happen. I don't even know if she's still in the business. All that. Barbara Whitesides says here she's a Indianapolis real estate agent. Barbara Whitesides, fireworks retailer, mom, realtor, conservationist, advocate, dancer, entrepreneur, adventurer, wannabe sailor, and marine biologist. I don't think it's the same person. Oh, wait a minute. I think I got her now. Here she is. Oh, gosh, that says obituary. I wonder if that could be the same person. You know what? It's just suddenly occurred to me. I don't fucking care what she's doing. What am I doing here? Wasting my time and yours. Come on, JC, get it together. It's Friday. Two new surveys are out. 76% of pet owners say they like to put their pets in costumes for Halloween. And 59% of pet owners say they plan to take their pets trick-or-treating. Also, 38% of us would prefer to see a dog or cat trick-or-treating at the door. Instead of a child, a friend, or a neighbor. It's disturbing. I posted a picture yesterday or the day before. I go walking into Costco, and all the Christmas stuff is out. You know why? Because, of course, because there's a war on Christmas, That's why we start celebrating it 3.5 months in advance. Because people are trying to, the government's trying to take your Christianity away. There's no Christ in Christmas. Yes, there is. When you stand at Costco and you look at a $1,200 Christmas tree, that's the first thing I say is, oh, Christ, are you kidding? I used to play this song all the time called Suddenly It's Christmas. It's the guy who did Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road, Loudon Wainwright III. It's a very, very clever song. And the way the lyrics go is, suddenly it's Christmas right after Halloween. Forget about Thanksgiving. That's just a buffet in between. And the joke used to be, obviously, because of the lyrics, the minute you, take the pumpkins off the front porch, the Christmas lights go up. And we thought that that song was funny. But in the course of the last 20 or 30 years since the song came out, it's gotten even worse. It's like, suddenly it's Christmas right after Labor Day. And as I said in that Facebook post, no wonder that by the time Christmas actually gets here, we're so sick and tired of it. And then Hallmark, that channel, they lose their fucking minds. Hallmark's new holiday movies this year include two about Asian American families, a Hanukkah movie, a Kwanzaa movie, and the first Hallmark holiday film focusing on an LGBTQ couple. Merry fucking Christmas. You see, the boat that Rodney Dangerfield had in Caddyshack is up for sale. $349,000 comes with a cardboard cutout of Rodney. Oh, I'm sure that costs about $11. That's what jacked up the price. There's also some other Caddyshack memorabilia. About 1,600 of Betty White's possessions are on the auction block from now until Sunday. There's a website called BuzzFeed. They made a list of some of the most random stuff. For example, they are trying to get rid of Betty White's vintage RCA TV with a remote and an antenna on top. Betty's Disney VHS collection, vintage leather baby shoes, a nun doll. Sort of creepy. Betty's board game collection, a home edition of Password, of course, which was hosted by her husband, Alan Ludden. An oil painting of Betty White from the 1950s. Some moon landing memorabilia. Where the hell did she get that? Betty's wedding ring, collection of cat jewelry. Oh, yeah. Because cats. Oh, they love that more than anything. A collection of animal figurines wearing sombreros. Two panda watches, Betty's Golden Girls director's chair, a framed picture of Betty with Bill Clinton, Betty's 2000 Cadillac Seville. That stuff is all up for auction. You'll have to dig around and find a website or something where I'm assuming you could participate if you got money. Beyonce going on tour next summer. Start saving your money. Sure, those tickets will probably go for about $5,000 a piece. Remember Bjork? She says she's moved back to Iceland because of gun violence in the United States. I don't really think she ever should have left Iceland, by the way. 28 years ago today, 1994, a movie that changed the lives of a lot of people, The Shawshank Redemption, it was released. Modern Family premiered on this date 13 years ago, 2009. Birthdays today, guy who I have been saying since the first time I saw him on camera, Anthony Mackie will win an Oscar someday. He's in the Marvel movies and Disney Plus and stuff. He's 44 today. Jason Alexander from Seinfeld, 63. Bruce Springsteen, as we said, 73. Julio Iglesias, 79. Birthdays tomorrow. Nia Vardalos, my big fat Greek wedding, 60. Mean Joe Green, 76. Catherine Zeta-Jones and her husband, same birthday. Slight age difference. She's turning 53. He's turning 78. That's 25-year difference. Well, my first wife, there was an 11-year difference, and now I got a 22-year difference. So I shouldn't comment, right? Will Smith, 54 on Sunday. Scottie Pippen, 57. Heather Locklear, 61. Geez, she's a train wreck, isn't she? Michael Madsen from Reservoir Dogs and The Natural, 65, and also the brother of the lovely Virginia Madsen. Like I said, 65 on Sunday. Mark Hamill, 71. Anson Williams, Potsy from Happy Days, 73. Cheryl Teagues, 75. Barbara Walters, who we were just talking about yesterday, 93. And I'm telling you, I've been saying this for a year or two now. She's going to be the next big celebrity to check out. All right, Bill Maher will be on tonight. And more, I am finding myself not caring. This is a television show that I started working with Bill Maher. I emceed a show for him back in 1985 at the Westport Playhouse. We became, I'm not saying we became pals, but when he, you know, stepped on his dick and got his show canceled on ABC, politically incorrect, I had a satellite dish and I could still pull the show out of other markets and I would, play stuff from places where the show was still on the air, like in Rochester or something like that. And he knew about that. And about once a year, I'd have him on the show. And as I often said, our comedians are doing the jobs that our journalists should be doing. People like George Carlin, people like Louis Black, people like Jon Stewart, John Oliver. These comedians are like, fuck it, I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm saying what I think about this political situation or this double standard or this injustice or whatever it is. That's what the journalists should be doing. But of course, they don't feel like they can because if they start getting a little too uppity, they lose their access. And if they lose their access, they lose their job. So it's, you know, it's delicate. It's not impossible. It's delicate. But over the course of the last, I would say, year or two, especially the last year, I don't know who's calling the shots for Bill Maher. But the thing that is especially annoying, and you'll hear it again tonight, it has ruined my ability to enjoy the show. They have the audience stacked with their own people. If a joke starts dying, pay attention to this. I'm serious. A joke is dying. You will hear four or five guys who are way in the back somewhere, the audience, start going, "Woo! Yeah! Wow! Woo!" Trying to pull the joke out of the fire. But the thing that just is, I'm going to try and record it for you tonight and play it for you on Monday. They got one guy in the audience who is like a professional laugher. I can almost imagine what this guy looks like. I picture him as being overweight, glasses, stringy hair combed back, and living with his mom. And this guy just sits there, and they must have a microphone right over him. And he's like, "Ha, ha, 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 ha," on everything, on everything. You know, one of the reasons we all sort of gravitated to Bill Maher is because you thought to ourselves, this guy's really smart. This show is for smart people. So if that's true, why would they then think that the audience wouldn't be able to hear this and figure it out? And just say, tell that fucking guy to shut up. It's really annoying. Just, it's terribly annoying. Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's former attorney. They asked him the other day, what do you think Trump's really worth? How much money does he actually have? Because we're, you know, hearing these stories now. The documentation from Letitia the other day is up there going, hey, he's got this apartment building. He's overvalued it by 65 times. 65 times. That's not a clerical error. That's not an oversight. And because he won't show his taxes and because there's no paper trail, he doesn't send any emails, he does everything in cash that he's able to do, people can't figure out what he's really worth. Except that Michael Cohen said that he thinks Trump is worth $1.2 billion. That's it. Tops. Now, $1 billion is a lot of money. Even the $0.2 is a lot of money. But the problem is it's far below what he has been trying to convince people of for years. Now, does Michael Cohen actually know? Probably. We talked a little bit about this yesterday. I'm just astonished by these pictures coming back from outer space from this Webb telescope, and even the Hubble is cranking out more pictures. And on Fridays, we like to do what is called nerd news. Well, that Webb telescope took an incredible picture of Neptune the other day, and NASA released audio of a meteorite crashing into Mars. It's the first audio recording of something hitting another planet. It's a sort of like a cross between a ping and a thud, by the way. Speaking of crashing into stuff, next Monday, the big day for NASA's DART mission. That's short for Double Asteroid Redirection Test. They're crashing a 1.5-ton spacecraft into an asteroid at 13,000 miles an hour to see if it changes the orbit. So if a big one is ever headed in our direction someday, maybe we can deflect it. I'm afraid what they're going to do is, you know, do that, but instead of deflecting, what it's going to do, it's just going to bust it into smithereens. And instead of having one big asteroid come down, we're going to have like 1,000 of them. I don't know which one would be worse. A study found that in theory, it might be fairly cheap and easy to refreeze the North and South Poles to keep global warming at bay. For about $11 billion a year, we could have planes spray aerosol in the atmosphere to shield them from sunlight. In case you missed it, the U.S. Space Force debuted its official song this week. I don't have the heart to actually go to the website and listen to it because you know it's going to be stupid. And if somebody said to you, how many ants would you guess there are in the world? Whatever you're thinking, it's more. A study in Germany put the number at 20 quadrillion ants. That's 20,000 trillion, or about 2.5 million ants for every human being. Which means, and they've been telling us for years, that there's so much protein in insects. If there's that many ants, we got to start eating them. You first. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Friday, September 23rd, 2022 is in the can. 46 days until the midterm clusterfuck. Now, we are here every weekday morning right about this time. We archive everything so you can binge on the weekend in case you miss something. You may email me, JC at JCOnTheLine.com. Facebook, The Showgram with JC Corcoran. We do politics only when it's unavoidable, and it's absolutely free. Have a great weekend. Happy 13th birthday, Francesca. And in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.